Hello and welcome back to the Album Files podcast. My name is Abby Mickey. I am joined by the lovely Ian Treloar.
Hello, Abby Mickey.
And Matt Deneve.
Oh, so he's lovely and I'm just Matt Deneve. Wow. So rude.
To be fair, I think this is the first time that I have got first billing ever. So I'm happy to be thrown a lovely bone this one time.
You are lovely. It is true.
Matt's like one of my best friends, though. So
what am I? Chopped liver? I'm glad I get to be third wheel on your little music podcast.
Come cover the Women's Tour de France with us.
I'd love to, but I'm simply too sexist.
Yeah, too sexist.
Anyway.
That's a race.
Speaking of sexism, we're here to talk about Lizzie McAlpine's Older. Bonus episode for everybody. Last week we did Matt's. Yeah, it doesn't really. It's not a good segue. It's one of my worst segues, but that's okay. Last week we talked about Matt's pick, Neutral Milk Hotel in the Aeroplane Over the Sea. Next week we'll talk about my pick, The Last Dinner Party's Prelude to Ecstasy. But this week we're giving everyone a bonus episode. Do you want to maybe tell people why we wanted to do a bonus episode on Lizzie McAlpine's Older?
Yeah, I'd love to. So her second album, 5 Seconds Flat, was I think the second album that we reviewed for this podcast. And I think it was an album that really meant a lot to me at the time. And I think from the reaction that it got from you guys, it was one that you guys really enjoyed and then became even more loved, I think, by the three of us as we went on in the weeks and months that followed. And we've kind of come back to her a bunch over the episodes that we've done, and we've been interested to see what she's been up to next. So when she announced that she was putting out a new album and then put out a couple of singles from it as well, I think we were all naturally quite interested by that. And I think it only makes sense, given the importance of Lizzie McAlpine's work in the podcast so far, that we spent a bit of time talking about her third album, which was out April 5th, so a couple of weeks ago now. It's a major label debut with RCA Records, and yeah, plenty to talk about in this one, I reckon.
I feel like I definitely, as I listened to the album more, even after we recorded the second episode where we talked about 5 Seconds Flat, I pretty much put it back on immediately after, which I've not done with anything else except maybe Frightened Rabbit. And I was really looking forward to this release. She took her time making this album. I think she was pretty open on social media about the spotlight having a negative impact on her and touring and everything. And you can definitely hear it in this album. I'm excited to dive into it.
I think just to set the stage a little bit more as well. So this, with the major label debut, she's also changed out her production team and her songwriting team. So before she had Philip Etherington and Aaron Ibbage, who we talked about last time. This time she's got quite a crew writing and producing for her. Mason Stoops, Ryan Lehman, Jeremy Most, Tony Berg, Taylor McColl, and Ethan Gruska. With that group kind of jumping in and out to write stuff and produce stuff. The only person I knew of that lot was actually Ryan Lerman from a group called Scary Pockets. And I think he's done some work with Wolfpack as well. Scary Pockets is a great band. You guys should check out if you like kind of funky covers of popular songs. And I think Lizzie McAlpine did a cover with them at some point, so they must go back a ways. But anyway, interesting to me that she changed out her production team. And also the production process, I guess, with this, where the previous album was created a lot more piecemeal, recording little bits at a time. The bulk of this new album was recorded live in the room with a backing band in just a few takes. So that gives it a bit of a different sound. And from what Lizzie's been saying about the album in the weeks after it's been released, she feels a lot better about the way this one sounds. And going back and listening to her second album, she feels like it's almost artificial, or almost like she loses herself in the way it was created, which I found quite interesting. So I'm keen to hear what you guys think about whether you notice the change in production team and the production method, and yeah, what the result is overall.
I did. I noticed that it was a lot more like stripped back, and I felt like when we talked about 5 seconds flat, one of my main criticisms was that I thought she overdid the production on it and that she could have benefited from maybe working with a different producer and having a more like acoustic sound. And I think that she did that with this album. Like she really leaned into her vocals and her writing for this album. And I think there are flourishes in the instrumentation part of it that are really cool. Like there's one part in You Forced Me To that almost sounds like last week we talked about that the Neutral Milk Hotel album was like a carnival ride or like a ride. This one is like a spooky circus. You Forced Me To kind of made me feel like, I don't know, like there were bears riding unicycles around or something. But in a terrifying way. And there's flourishes throughout the album, and I think on that song specifically, that are like that add to the music instead of kind of taking away from her sound. And I felt like she was throwing so much at 5 seconds flat, even though I love the album. The way that she approached this album, really like playing to her strengths, I felt like it worked super well. And personally, I feel like this is her best work that she's ever done. And a lot of that is because of her vocals and how much she emotes when she sings. Like she's got a really unique voice, and whenever she sings, like it sounds heartbreaking, but she really is able to capture the emotion in the song as she's singing it. Like you listen to it, and even if you're not listening to the lyrics, it like hurts. It's like physically painful to listen to her sing.
Yeah. The breathy vocals are just quite incredible, really. I noted in particular the one line at the end of the title track, Older, where she sings, "I wish I knew what the end is." Yeah, the second last time that she goes through that line, her voice just kind of cracks in this way that's just heartbreaking. And that's just one of a multitude of examples throughout the album where, yeah, like you said, Abby, she has a very impressive way of conveying that emotion through her voice, and such voice control as well. Like there's such like very technically talented, but very emotive at the same time, which is,
I think, one of the things that works really well with this album compared to 5 seconds flat, where that showed some of its sort of sophistication in arrangements. It also at times felt like it was a little bit gratuitous, and it was like hitting you over the head with it. And I think while this is a more stripped back and sparse collection of songs, there's still a lot going on in the mix. It's, if you're listening to it superficially, then you're probably like, oh, okay, this is just her with a piano or her with a guitar. But there's a lot more going on in the mix, which particularly rewards like close listening with headphones, hearing the full scope of what's going on there. It's a very rewarding album to listen to with attention and to revisit.
I completely agree with that. We talked about this last week, but my first listen to this, or I think my first listen, or anyway, I listened to this a few times when we were over in Belgium, driving from France up through Belgium into the Netherlands late at night in a van with a bunch of work colleagues, including Ian, and, you know, raining outside. And tonally, it was just perfect for the music. But I remember saying to Ian at the time that you need to listen to this with headphones on, and that it really rewards that. Because, yeah, like you said, Ian, there's so many little flourishes in there that are really, you just don't hear if you're not listening with headphones. And just little things in the background as well. With 5 seconds flat, we talked a lot about the voice memos and little bits of and pieces that were kind of slotted in there. And there's not that many in this one, but there are a few there buried in the mix, like just little recorded bits. I'm trying to remember which song it is now, but there's an introduction to a heavier part of one of the songs where I think one of the producers, here we go, it's on, I guess, just before the build up, you can hear in the background one of the producers saying, "Here we go," and then it kind of crescendos. And I don't know. It's nice that there are almost those little Easter eggs for people that are listening on headphones, because it just adds this richness and depth to the experience, I think.
I think also the vocal harmonies are really impressive. In Movie Star, for instance, there's these bits where it sort of slips in and out of like just a single vocal line and then double tracking, and then these gorgeous vocal harmonies that are sort of layered over the top of it. And it's a much fuller album, I think, despite being a more stripped back album than 5 Seconds Flat. And it's more... I remember that one of my criticisms of 5 Seconds Flat is that it felt a little bit structural. Like, you could kind of see where the joins were between different elements of the songs. And I didn't think that it really... To me, that was a album of amazing moments rather than an album of amazing songs. And I think that this progresses from that quite nicely, in that the songs sound much more of a piece, much more fully formed and continuous, and you don't see those seams in the way that I felt you could on some of the songs on 5 Seconds Flat.
Ian, do you think you would have picked up that it was recorded live in the room before you knew that it was, if that makes sense? Would you have listened to it and gone, oh, this wasn't created chunk by chunk, this was actually a bunch of people in a room?
I don't know. Because I think that there are clever people that are very sophisticated with their recording practices, and they can probably fake that pretty well. I didn't know that until you said that, because I haven't really... It doesn't seem that there have been that many reviews in the usual places for this album. Doesn't seem to have made that biggest splash in the review space. So, and I haven't really gone looking for any interviews or features to sort of explain the creative process behind it. So I've sort of approached this just as the music by itself and just listening to the music. But no, I don't know if I would have picked up on that. But knowing that, I think that when I go back and listen, that will help fill it out. Did you pick up on that? Were there things that were just like, oh, this is obviously, you know, a bunch of people in the room doing this together?
No, not really. But I didn't have the same concerns as you did about 5 Seconds Flat being so obviously created in chunks, or that you could see the seams or hear the seams. I didn't have that experience with it. And I liked the production on the album more than you guys did, I think. So while I can definitely hear the difference now that I know that it's created differently, I don't think it was immediately obvious to me. But that just could be the fact that I enjoyed production on both of them, and it didn't stand out enough to really grab my attention, if that makes sense. I was more focused on the overall feel and the lyrics in this case, and just the craftsmanship, I guess, on display.
I felt like this was a perfect continuation of what she did with 5 Seconds Flat, though. Like, it very much, the theme of this album is maturing, time passing. And I feel like with the last album, it was exactly what it needed to be. Like, it was a messy teenage girl going through, you know, heartbreak and stuff that teenage girls go through. And this was very much more of like a, she's coming of age, and the sound of the album, the themes of the album and everything is like the perfect continuation from what she'd already started to explore in 5 Seconds Flat. And I feel like she nailed that. Like, if that was the prompt she was given, she A+, 10 out of 10.
I agree. And it's right there in the title, isn't it? Older. And that track is about getting older. It's about, and she talks about her mum in there, and there's a track towards the end, it's called March, that's about, you know, at least partially about the passing of her father in March 2020. So there's these themes of not only her own growth and maturity, but those around her as well, and the effect that has on her and on her own maturity, I suppose. It does feel like a more grown-up album for sure. But at the same time, there's also a lot of the same themes are present as they were before, but just in a, through a different lens almost. You know, there's still, you know, relationship turmoil is at the heart of this album and how she processes that, but it's kind of a more mature look at that, which is interesting. There's a moment listening to that first track where I thought, oh, this is going to be a bit more upbeat than her first album, or her previous album. Because it's kind of like, I mean, it's a beautiful song. I wish it was longer, to be honest. But, you know, it's almost, it feels like, yeah, a story of falling in love, I guess. And you're like, oh, this is going to be good. But then it feels like from as early as track two, you know, she's Come Down Soon is the title of the track, and it feels like she's waiting for things to fall apart. And then from there, it's a pretty sad ride, but also just stunningly beautiful in that sadness, I think.
I mean, the album is devastating. It's so easy to listen to from the very first track to the last. It's easy to listen to because it flows so well and it's just like beautiful to listen to. But then the combination of her voice and the lyrics is like, this is such a sad album, which we know that she went through a lot the last couple of years. She's written about it extensively on social media. So we knew that she was in a dark place when she canceled the tour that she had set up for 5 Seconds Flat. But to actually hear it, a lot of what she spoke about in the songs, like, I had a really hard time listening to this album and not tearing up.
I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair. I'd love to get your thoughts on some specific tracks, because there are some that really, I mean, I really like the album overall, but there are a few that stand out to me in particular that I think are worth talking about. All Falls Down, I think, is a really interesting one, because to me it sounds quite tonally different to the rest of the album, and I'm curious about how you guys felt about that one.
I enjoyed one of the conversations we had in the car or afterwards when we were like, let's not talk about the album too much and save it for the podcast. But you were going through it kind of track by track, and you're like, I don't think you'll like this one. I don't think you'll like this one. And you were right. Like, All Falls Down for me, like, you kind of knew what tracks would work for me and what wouldn't. And you kind of hit the nail on the head with your predictions. All Falls Down is probably the loudest moment on the album. I don't think that there's anything that gets much more raucous than that. Maybe Broken Glass.
Broken Glass does, yeah.
But it doesn't really, I don't know, it doesn't fit for me in the sort of scope of the album, really. Like, it is one of the busier albums. It's got this kind of baroque pop feel. It's got woodwind, and I think, like, is it a bass clarinet? There's something honking away there. And then it has this kind of feral sort of freak out towards the end. And as a piece of songwriting and lyrical construction, it's quite cool the way that she sort of counts down the years. She's like 23, 22 on the verses. And musically, that freak out matches the state of mind that she's in when she's doing that. But within the album itself, it is a bit of a sore thumb, I think.
What do you reckon, Abby?
I don't agree. I feel like the theme of the song, and also they can't all just be like gut-wrenching. And I think this one is a very nice reprieve from, I mean, if it's still not like a happy song, like, none of them are happy. And at least this one, you don't feel like you want to cry if you're just listening to it passively.
I think I'm somewhere in the middle. Yeah, go on in, please.
I was just going to say, 5 Seconds Flat was just like 12 tracks of Ceiling, so I'd have been a pretty happy guy.
Happy, but really, really sad.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I probably fall somewhere in the middle of you two guys. I feel like it does stand out tonally. It doesn't feel like it fits particularly well, but also I don't mind that it doesn't fit. think it is a nice little bit of reprieve. The clarinets are just funny to me. It just, I think it's the only place on the album you hear them, and it just kind of stands out. I wrote down that it's quite Ben Folds-ish in its playfulness, which is always a good thing from my point of view. But maybe that's also the clarinets. It kind of harks back to some of the earlier Ben Folds 5 stuff, which I quite liked. Ian, you talked about Broken Glass. I want to hear your thoughts on this one, because I love this song so, so much. And the heavier section, man, that hits so hard, and I just absolutely adore it. It kind of reminds me of the end of the Beatles' I Want You, She's So Heavy. Just that repeated loop that just gets heavier and heavier, and you just, yeah, just incredible. And I just wrote down, listening to this, that I wanted more of that heavy stuff from her. I mean, I would sign up for a heavy Lizzie McAlpine album in a heartbeat. I'm curious how you guys found it, because I think, Ian, I said at the time that you probably wouldn't like it, but I'm curious now how you and Abby obviously feel about it.
I like that one more than All Falls Down. I think that the heaviness that I like from Lizzie McAlpine is sad minor key heaviness rather than happy honking heaviness.
This isn't happy honking, though. This is like distorted guitars and like big build up, big riffy build up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like it didn't jar with me in the same way that All Falls Down did. I think it felt more of the whole than that song. I liked it, but my favorite songs on the album are the more subdued. I'm saying that, but for me, the best song on the album is Vortex, and that's kind of got a build at the end. That's a clear standout for me. So, yeah, no, I'm probably just talking absolute nonsense again. I do like some of the loud stuff, but not the ones with clarinets.
I mean, I feel like Broken Glass really like builds well, which is something that she did on 5 Seconds Flat that we loved. So it starts out as being super subdued and then kind of builds and gets grander and grander throughout the song. And I feel like that's just something she does super well. So I'm not surprised at all that it's there, because it's like Taylor Swift does a bridge better than anyone else, and Lizzie McAlpine can build a song into something else like no one else.
Do you like it though, that song?
I do like it. Yeah, I do like it. But I mean, the lyrics like really freak me out. I feel like there are multiple songs where like I like Broken Glass, You Forced Me To is one as well, that I just, man, I want to like wrap this girl in bubble wrap and make sure that nothing ever happens to her again. Because if she's been through this much pain in her life already and she's only 23, like someone get her a cake or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I felt empathetic towards her personally more so than I expected I would. I think there's always this level of detachment from artists that are creating media that's consumed by the popular, by the public at large. But I don't know. There's just something about her work that is, she's inviting you into her world in this way that for me is really, really personal. I don't know if it's just that we kind of got into her stuff before she kind of took off, or if it's just the nature of her songwriting or the content or what, but yeah, it's hard for me to listen to this and not feel like, oh man, someone should just give her a hug. Let's hope she's doing okay.
And I feel like one of the coolest things about this album is that she, since we recorded the 5 Seconds Flat episode, she blew up because of Ceilings. Like we kind of recorded that album before she was kind of a mainstream-ish artist or inching towards the mainstream. And I think one of the best things about this album is that she doesn't make an entire album about like similar to Ceilings. She didn't lean into the fame that she was getting from that song. Instead, she did something that was totally authentic to her. And I think that makes the album way more stunning. I don't want to hear a whole album that sounds like Ceilings. I don't want her to do what we want her to do. I want her to do what she wants to do. And that's exactly what she did. And my heart is broken because of it. But I'm like, will forever cry to this album because it's so good. The best breakup album I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, wow. I think
that's saying that's something part because of what? The Tortured Poets Department came out last week.
Well, that wasn't one breakup. That was two.
No, it was like 10. That is every single thing she's been holding back, she wrote into that album. It's got a Kim Kardashian diss track, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, there's a bit going on.
That's
we may talk about that album. Maybe. We may.
Maybe.
I think that the reason that there's that strong emotional response to this album is because everything feels authentic. Everything feels lived in. It doesn't feel like a costume that she's wearing or something that she's putting on. Like everything sort of rings true in the lyrics as something that she's experienced or something that she's gone through herself. And it is quite sort of strongly confessional in that sense. And there is power to that, I think. A lot of power to that. Like, yeah. We spoke about how 5 Seconds Flat is her age 20 or 21 or whatever and dealing with the stuff that somebody of that age goes through with relationships. And this feels like it has a lot of that. It covers similar ground, but the relationship dynamics or seem a lot more mature. There's one of the tracks that I come back to is Drunk Running, which talks about her partner or ex-partner or whatever as dealing with alcohol dependency and the sort of journey around that. And I think that those are things that you aren't really conscious of or dealing with or thinking about when you're 20 or 19, and that kind of stuff is more likely to be brushed off as just like, oh, it's just he's being wacky or whatever. And I think that the relational stuff in this feels like a move to an more mature dynamic and all the baggage that comes with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think what I come back to is, though, that this, for some reason, feels more... I feel more empathy towards her personally than I do with someone like Taylor Swift, who I think you could argue writes stuff that's equally as confessional or deep or whatever. And I'm trying to work out why that is, whether it is just like Taylor is so big and so wealthy and so, I don't know, so big in every sense of the word that it's hard to kind of, for me personally, to relate personally or something. And Lizzie McAlpine feels like a smaller, more approachable sort of creator or something. Or if it's just the instrumentation and the production, the way that Lizzie uses, you know, much more stripped back production and, you know, the really breathy vocal and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I just find that interesting. And ultimately, it doesn't really matter. But I am just left feeling like I really enjoy this album and I'm really affected by it, but also just have this sense of like, yeah, I just hope she's doing okay, that I don't necessarily get when I listen to other artists' work.
I think with Taylor Swift, though, you're maybe... like, there's such omnipresence to her and it's such a sort of industry behind it that it... even if it's subconsciously, you have that level of detachment, I think. Like
Did you feel that way about Taylor Swift when she wrote Red, though?
I thought you were going to ask about whether I felt it with Folklore.
I think even when she released Folklore, she'd already been around and capitalizing on those feelings of hurt for many, many years. But when she wrote Red, she was in a similar situation to like where Lizzie is now in her career, bigger than Lizzie is now probably, but Yeah, but I mean, like, relatively, like,
sure.
In a similar place.
I think I...
Maybe you're just tired of Taylor Swift's emotions. Sorry.
No, not tired of her emotions at all, but I think the difference is that I came to Red later on, so I didn't listen to it much at the time, I don't think. Maybe if I had, I would feel differently or more strongly about it, but I came to that album most significantly once she was already a megastar. So there was that level of detachment already, whereas, yeah, I think with Lizzie, it's like... Yeah, I don't know. She feels more approachable or not so far removed or whatever. And even though she is massively far removed and all of that, for all intents and purposes, it's exactly the same as Taylor Swift, but it just heightens the experience of listening to it for me, which I think is it's a powerful thing.
I think an interesting midpoint between the Lizzie McAlpin and the Taylor Swift sort of polls is that I kind of see Lizzie McAlpin as being on a similar trajectory to, say, Phoebe Bridgers, who is selling out stadiums but not selling out like the MCG kind of thing. And I see Lizzie McAlpin catering for a similar audience to that, filling that similar kind of niche. And in the response to Phoebe Bridgers, it feels like there is the more successful she gets, the more people put their guard up about her. Like it feels a little bit more like, oh, okay, this person is now in the tabloids or whatever. So there is that kind of barrier between somebody that is a star or a megastar or whatever. And I hope that it doesn't get that way with Lizzie McAlpin, but, you know, she's playing similar sized venues now to what Phoebe Bridgers was when she was last here. So maybe that is where she's going to end up. I don't know.
I mean, I hope more people catch on. I feel like I was pretty disappointed in the lack of strong reaction to this album in the music space. I expected this to be reviewed on like Rolling Stone or Pitchfork, and it wasn't. Like I feel like I thought after Ceilings went huge, what was it, over the summer, that I expected there to be more excitement about this album, and especially because I do feel it's the best thing she's ever done, which is really saying something because 5 Seconds Flat is a phenomenal album. I thought that there would be more, just more excitement about the album in general.
Maybe it'll be like Ceilings was last time, where that wasn't a single from the album initially. Maybe it'll just take a little while. I think there was some review that was talking about how Vortex will be the Ceilings of this album. Maybe it'll just take a little while for that to catch on. Maybe it needs TikTok or something to kick it off.
God, what a sad world we live in, where TikTok needs to dictate which artists are popular.
I mean, ultimately, strong for me, dislike. It doesn't matter how many people listen to it. Like, I don't particularly care. I'm just really excited we got another album from her and that it is as good as it is. I think we're lucky to get that, and I'm glad she created it.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Ian, you said, I think a few episodes ago when I mentioned Older, or maybe Abby mentioned it, I can't remember, it was in the What We're Listening To section, we're talking about Older, and you said that it didn't really grab you in the same way that Ceilings did. I know that's a high bar, so I'm not necessarily asking you to rank it against that, but I'm wondering if that song in particular has grown on you, because I know that it has grown on me, and maybe the Jimmy Fallon performance of it as well really helped, because, man, that was great. But yeah, curious on your thoughts on whether that's grown on you after multiple listens.
I think it works in the context of the album. I don't think it works particularly well in the context of here is the first song from this thing that I'm putting out, because it isn't, like, it's almost too one note. Like, it doesn't do all that much, which is fine. Like, what it does is nice. It's pleasant. But there
Do you think it...
No. Please.
Do you think it's an accurate representation for the album that she was about to put out and was a good single in that, you know, it gave you a little bit of a taste of what to expect from her next album? Because I feel like as a single put out before an album that's like, hey, here's a little taste of my album to come so that you can get excited about it or preemptively buy yourself a whole boatload of tissues, then I feel like it did exactly what it was supposed to do.
I don't know if it did, though. Like, it is one of the less... like, there aren't really that many flourishes on it. It's fairly without ornament. It's... I don't know what I would choose instead of it.
Like, that was my follow-up
Vortex,
question.
But Vortex is long and kind of wraps up the story of the relationship in it in kind of a bow. So maybe that's like spoiler alert for what's to come if that's the first song you hear from it.
Maybe Elevator or Drunk Running would have been like good singles instead. I feel like the Elevator at least like is another, it's maybe has a little bit more to it, but it's so short that it wouldn't have been a good single to put out. But
I really wish that song was longer.
Oh yeah,
I agree. I think that's my only thing is that I wish that song was longer. I have not a single negative thing I can say about this album, and I cannot pick favorite songs because I love them all. This is like a very, very good album, but that song could be longer.
Yeah.
It kind of slots together. Sorry, Matt.
It feels to me like somebody along the way has gone, no, like she's written a verse and a chorus or whatever, and then played it to the band, and they're like, yeah, that's it, that's great. And it is, it's really good, but yeah, it kind of builds and then you're kind of like, yeah, it could be better by continuing on. And yeah, it feels like a missed opportunity.
Maybe it leaves you wanting more and then you have the rest of the album.
Yeah, but then it just leaves me wanting more from that song in particular because it is different to the others. It does have a different tone, and it does. It is kind of optimistic and bright in the way that other songs aren't necessarily. But yeah, it's a very minor gripe in an otherwise excellent album.
I wonder if the sequencing of it, whether it was planned for the Elevator to... Because although they're clearly different songs, Come Down Soon and the Elevator kind of dovetail together. And I wonder if the intent was for that to be like part one, part two. And in that sense, it's a disjointed but 5 minute song. Yeah, I don't know. But that song's... The Elevator is great and Come Down Soon is good, but not as good.
One thing I wanted to mention was that I think the back half of the album is a lot stronger than the first. The first half is good, but I think the back half is spectacular. Of the 14 songs, I had asterisks next to 9 of them, and 6 of the last 7 I put an asterisk next to. I think it just ends so strongly. Yeah, Vortex is the perfect closer, but basically everything from, what is it, Drunk Running onwards, except for You Forced Me To, I think it is just, yeah, that one's fine, but I think the rest are excellent. Do you guys have that feeling as well,
fine,
that it kind of got better? It's good. I think,
what, yeah, about the part where she sings I Love You Backwards?
Oh, I didn't pick that up. The bit
it's
I wrote
impressive.
Down was... the lyric, I want you to hate me, I deserve it for my crimes, which is like, wow, okay. Did you guys feel like it was stronger in the back half, or is that just me?
I hadn't really considered it in those terms until now, but yes, now you mention it. And I think Drunk Running is the point at which the strongest section begins. It finishes really strong.
I feel like I don't think either half is better. I mean, I agree with what you're saying to a certain extent, but I also feel like just the album itself is so good that I don't think I could piece it apart. Like, I'm never going to listen to a song from this album. It's an album to listen to start to finish.
Yeah, that's fair. Ultimately, it doesn't matter which half is better or not. I think it's... I was just curious whether you guys felt the same way, because I think the established wisdom is that you put your stronger songs at the start to try and keep people's attention. But maybe it's all just good. Maybe it's all just really, really good. And it more than does that. And yeah, maybe it just doesn't matter. Either way, it's all great.
It is all great. We don't rate these ones, do we? Do you want to rate it?
We haven't in the past for the bonus episodes, but I'm happy to if you guys want to.
Do you want to, Ian?
Sure. I mean, I have a number in my head.
Okay, what's your number in your head?
8.5.
9.5.
Cool. I'll go 8.8, but I think that it'll probably grow from there. I think I will come back to this in a while and feel like it's better than 5 Seconds Flat. But at the moment, the familiarity of 5 Seconds Flat still feels a little stronger to me, or makes it feel a little stronger to me. But I think this has greater potential and will grow over time. So I expect this to be more than a 9 out of 10. But at the moment, it's probably an 8.8.
I feel quite strongly that this is better than 5 Seconds Flat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon this is the better album.
Before we wrap up the episode, do you want to tell everybody about the DM that you received?
Me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we didn't talk about this last week. This is so good.
It is very nice. So we kind of assume that nobody listens to this podcast besides a handful of people that we know. And we love all of those people.
I would say our partners, but Tom's doesn't listen, so...
He's doing other things. And we really appreciate and love that people listen to this, but I don't think any of us really think that it's have any illusions about it lighting up the iTunes charts or anything. So when we hear from people that we might not have expected to be listening to it, it feels cool and unexpected. So whilst we were in Belgium for work, on a beer bike, actually, which is a strange place to receive this kind of message, but we were pedaling around Ghent on a beer bike, and I felt my pocket vibrate, and I got my phone out, and I'd got a message from Fife Dangerfield, who's the frontman for the Guillemots, saying that he'd been listening to the episode that we'd done about the Guillemots, and that he really loved it and appreciated that we were talking about the album, and agreed when I said that it was deeply uncool, and said that he thought that the sort of book club with music idea was a nice one. So that was not somebody I was expecting to hear from at like 10 o'clock at night in Belgium on a beer bike.
It was a very strange moment, you passing me that phone and trying to remember who he was to start with, because I knew the name but then couldn't remember, and then reading the message, I was like, oh, wow, that's incredible. That made an already good night really, really cool, and definitely one of the highlights of doing this podcast so far. I think up there with the interview that you did with... a guy whose name I've already forgotten, but...
Mr. Man from There Will Be Fireworks, Nikki.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to have interactions with actual musicians. That's cool.
It is cool. I think we just need to keep aiming for that low to mid-tier artist, and then we might get somewhere. I don't think we're going to be hearing from... If we do hear from Lizzie McAlpin, you have made something very beautiful.
Wow, that'd be crazy. Yeah.
Okay, just putting it out there. Should we reach out to her? Would we do an interview with her?
Sure, of course. Why not?
All right. I'll do it. I'll reach out to him.
Wow.
The little podcast.
I would
could.
Say that I'll reach out to Taylor Swift, but I sent her 6 wedding invites and never heard back. So I think I might be on the block list now.
She's got you filed like- under a folder of Swifties to ignore.
To be fair, though, I sent her 3 and in 3 different forms because I was like, I don't know if she'll receive one of them. So I might as well send 3 different ways, and then we changed the date because of COVID. So I had to send 3 more because what if she was planning to come and then all of a sudden she showed up on August 2nd, 2020 and there was no wedding?
She'd look like a real dickhead, that's what. was there any like message, or was it just pure invitation, that's it? Or was there like an explainer saying, I like your music?
No, there was no. Well, I think maybe for the Instagram DM. But I mean, she doesn't check her Instagram. She's not, she was never going to come. What's the harm?
Was there like a physical invitation?
Yeah, I mailed one to her old, like where you used to be able to send fan mail.
With like human hair or?
No.
just a normal.
Don't make it weird.
Oh, I'm sorry. It is nice. I'm sad that she didn't come to your wedding.
I mean, it was never gonna happen. I'm not that delusional.
Yeah, I mean, at least Taylor Swift got invited.
Wow. It's got awkward up in here.
Had I even met you at that point? I don't think so. I don't think I even ever met you.
No, that would have been stranger inviting me than Taylor Swift, actually, to be fair.
I'm just wondering, what would it have been like if she had rocked up? What kind of power dynamic would that have been like at your wedding when it's supposed to be your big day and you've got the biggest pop star on the planet sitting on a table somewhere? Like, how would that have worked?
It would have been totally cool because Latvians don't care about famous people. So they would have been like, oh, this must be one of Abby's friends. I'm not even joking. Like, nobody would have cared.
Yeah, but that's great. How would you have gone having her in the room when it's supposed to be you focusing on your new husband?
I would have been like, I'm so glad you made it. It's now going to be weird that my first dance song is Everything Will Change with you, and Everything Has Changed with you and Ed Sheeran, and we are not going to play the Taylor's version because you haven't released it yet. So I'm so sorry that you're here and we're playing the stolen version of your song, but if you could have released Red TV before the wedding, then this wouldn't be a problem.
Well, you just need to invite Ed Sheeran as well, and then they could have played it for you at the wedding.
I would not have kept my cool then.
This is basic stuff, Abby. Why didn't you do that?
Okay, look, everyone thinks that I'm this like crazed Taylor Swift fan. I scored an 8 out of 10 on the How Well Do You Know Taylor Swift quiz, by the way. I'm actually not that big of a fan. Like, I love her music, but I have interacted with many a famous people because I worked in one of the biggest, like the most famous, most popular burger joints in Aspen, Colorado, where the famous people tend to frequent for many, many summers. And I know how to be cool. So if I actually was to meet Taylor Swift on the street, I wouldn't pass out. I actually wouldn't even look at her. I would like look down because she has too many people freaking out and like swarming her at all times. And she doesn't need one more. So I probably would just ignore her if I ran into her on the street. Like, I'm being completely serious. The poor girl doesn't need another person screaming and fainting when they see her.
On the quiz that you scored 8 out of 10 on, I got 7 out of 10. And one of the questions was complete bullshit because it was the wrong cat.
It was the wrong cat. That was Olivia Benson that they put on the picture, not Benjamin Button. So they really tried to throw you off.
Yeah. Scandalous.
Yeah. Everyone knows what Benjamin Button looks like.
I actually don't know what Benjamin Button looks like, but I sure as hell know what Olivia Benson looks like.
He's in the music video. He's in the Lover music video.
You know that I don't watch YouTube. You know that I never watch any of the Tiny Desk concerts that you send me.
I only barely get you to turn up to record the podcast.
Oh, yeah, come on now.
We really need to keep our expectations low with Ian. Okay, so are we doing a Tortured Poets Department album review or no?
Yes, let's do it. Yep. You just don't want us to be too mean, right? Is that right, Abby?
I mean, I feel like with our regular episodes, when you put an album forth, you are opening yourself up to criticism of that album. I personally hold Taylor Swift music very dear to my heart. And so I would never, for the same reason I have yet to choose an Ed Sheeran album, I don't think I could emotionally take criticism. So I would just like you guys to go in with a little bit of grace. Just really listen to the album, okay? Like, I saw a couple, I made the mistake of reading the Pitchfork review of this album, and it made me feel sick to my stomach. I feel like people are reviewing this album already, and this is if there was ever an album that you need to sit with and digest in order to understand and enjoy it, then it is this album. Like, remember when she released Reputation and everyone hated it, but then you listen to it more and it was freaking awesome? It's very similar. I just feel like this is an album that you cannot rush your takes. So that's all I have to say.
I'm fine with all of that, but I will say that just a minor criticism to lay this out might be easier for some of us to sit with it and take it all on board if it wasn't more than 2 hours long and 31 songs.
It is. It's a long
album. Some of us are time poor.
Yeah, I did pitch only doing the first half of the album, and no, Matt said no, because all the Aaron Dessner stuff is on the back. Yeah, I know. So that's not my fault, Ian, that you don't have time. That sounds like a you problem.
I like how this episode started with Abby being like, the lovely Ian Treloar, and then the last 5 minutes has just been absolutely dunking on Ian. This is great.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have to review this album, but I feel like there is a lot to be said about it.
There is a lot to be said. I just need to do a lot of homework.
Matt already knows my rating of this album.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people would know what your rating of the album is.
I doubt Ian has read the newsletter.
I have read the newsletter, and you've said it was a 10 out of 10.
Oh wow, I didn't know you read my newsletter.
I read your newsletter.
Wow, that's so nice of you.
Just everyone out here assuming the worst of me.
If you haven't already, please subscribe to Abby's We'll Talk newsletter, available now, escapecollective.com. And while you're there, sign up to the Down Under Digest, also available at escapecollective.com.
And my dumb new podcast about dumb bullshit that happens in Belgium.
Are you guys doing regular tangent podcasts?
No, because we're not regularly
together.
Or is this
a spontaneous situation?
No, it's not spontaneous. We've been planning it for a while and just haven't.
No, but I mean the follow-up episode.
The follow-up episode will be at the Tour de France.
It's only an in-person thing.
So it is spontaneous.
It's not spontaneous if we plan it.
Spontaneously released?
Yeah, intermittently released. Very, very intermittent. There you
go. I think the way I'd sum it up is the Tangents podcast needs the in-person chemistry and man love that only in-personness can conjure.
Matt, should we make a Tangents episode when we're at the Tour? We don't have time. We're not going to have time.
No, and I don't want to
No rest days at the Women's Tour de France.
Well, there actually is this year.
Well, okay. It's decided we will do a Tortured Poets Department episode, TBD.
And just to clarify, one more thing to clarify on that. Are we allowed to speculate about who the songs are about? I saw your tweet today railing against those who decide to do so.
I just feel like we're at a point where, of course, a part of Taylor Swift's fame is speculating about who her songs are about. It's like followed her around for thus long. But she's been very clear with the rollout of this album and the first song of the album and many songs on the album that she's sick and tired of it. So I feel like I'm not going to say that I haven't listened to the album and been like, huh, I wonder if this song is about Matty Healy. Like, of course I've thought about it, but I just feel like constantly trying to suss out every single tiny little detail within the song takes away from the music itself. And I think that Taylor's at a point where her music demands more attention than just, oh my God, who is she singing about?
100%. Yep. And I certainly wouldn't advocate for us doing a track by track breakdown of who she's dissing this time. but just wanted to make sure it's not totally off limits, because I think it is interesting in parts. But yeah, it shouldn't be the main focus, that's for
sure. I don't think it's totally off limits. Yeah. I do, like, that being said, Kim Kardashian diss track, I'm here for it. Although she wasn't exactly subtle in who that song was about. She literally spelled it out for you in case you did not notice.
So then why go to the effort of giving her a different name in the song?
I don't know, just to make it more hilarious. Brings me great joy.
Much to talk about.
Yes, there's a lot to talk about. Okay, we'll be back next week to talk about The Last Dinner Party's Prelude to Ecstasy. And then at some point in the future, we'll talk about Taylor Swift's Torture Poets Department. People have actually been asking for it on Twitter, one person. So one of our 50 listeners wants us to do a review of the album, and we will.
It's a good percentage.
So much for listening to this episode of the Album Files podcast, and happy listening.